Hello, and welcome to the Television Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be spotlighting a television show or season that we think you'll find interesting. In this episode, I'm joined by my sister, and we're going to have a spoiler-filled discussion on the first season of Death and Other Details, which aired on Hulu, and I don't think they got picked up for a second season.
If they did, I'm not aware of it.
Yeah, I thought I'd read somewhere they hadn't, but I could be wrong on that. It stars Violet Bean and Mandy Patinkin. She was in Flash, God Friended Me. He was in first season of Criminal Minds, Princess Bride, among other things. He's had an extensive career. And this was kind of sort of an Agatha Christie-style mystery in the modern day.
Yeah. I saw an article that said they kind of wanted that feeling of Murder on the Orient Express on a cruise ship.
And they kind of had that. It was a good idea. It was an odd execution.
Yeah.
Because the basic thing is it's a private cruise ship, essentially, that a rich guy buys out the entire cruise of. They go on a cruise. It looks like a business deal is going to be happening there. And murder mystery, people die. One of the people on the ship happens to be the world's greatest detective. You know, their words, not his. And tries to solve the case. But it all ties back to a case he had failed to solve about 20 years earlier. The death of Violet Bean's character's mother. All of that kind of intertwines and mystery ensues.
Mm-hmm.
And there were aspects of it that I felt they did a good job on. There were other aspects on not so much.
When I watched a show recently, and it was kind of a, we've got to solve a mystery, and another character says, the butler did it. And the guy's like, that's fine, except there is no butler. But the butler always did it. There were times in this that I had that feeling.
Yeah, I think they were trying to do a story with the societal norms almost of a century earlier, a very class-based society, that sort of a thing, in a way that just felt a little artificial, like setting up a, you know, buying out an entire cruise ship for a cruise.
Yeah.
And it was a private one versus from a cruise line. It's like, do they even, I don't know, it just seemed bizarre. The cruise ship was an odd size to me.
I mean, there are ships that only take like 300 passengers. They do exist. I've even been on a cruise where the ship was so small, and it was an ocean cruise, but that they had no showroom and no entertainers on board.
This seemed bigger than that, but smaller than a standard small cruise ship.
Yeah.
Enough that, well, and it's hard to say because the cabins in this thing are gargantuan.
Yes.
And there were so many things that it felt like they had just taken over a custom hotel or whatever and said, okay, pretend this is the cruise ship.
Well, and even the crew cabins were gargantuan, and there was no rhyme or reason to who had roommates and who didn't have roommates.
And just the layout didn't seem the least bit like you would put on a cruise ship.
I feel the writers should have taken a one-week writing retreat on a cruise. And I say 1 week. I know there are 3-day and 4-day cruises. But on a 3 or 4 day cruise, you really don't have enough time to get into the mindset of a cruise.
When would you have had them do that in the writing process?
Honestly, I would have done it relatively early. I would have done it after I'd done the basic plotting, but before I wrote the scripts. Because like at one point, it's we need to sit with the crew while they're having one of their meals, and the crew is having their meal in the same space that the passengers eat.
Well, and it was funny because that space felt like a large atrium kind of a thing. It apparently was the dining and event hall and just felt really kind of strange there. It didn't seem set up to be able to serve people. And I don't want to harp on just, oh, it doesn't feel like a cruise ship or whatever. But that is something that where the very setting felt unreal to the point of, oh, we've got a dead body. We've got to put it somewhere. Let's put it in the freezer with all the food.
Yeah, let's put it on a counter in the middle of all the food.
Yeah, there are certain things like that that just wouldn't be done.
And let's not clear the food out to a different freezer. Let's leave the food in the freezer with the body.
Well, and there are a number of things that are set on one of the decks with the bar and the pool. The pool, if it was more than 10 feet wide by 20 feet across or whatever, I would be shocked.
Yeah. World's smallest lap pool.
Yeah. And there were just things like that. And I get the show's not about being on a cruise ship or whatever, but if you're going to set it there, there needs to be aspects where it seems almost believable. And the number of people there were at times felt like there was crowds and, you know, tons and tons of people. It's a cruise ship or whatnot. But there are other times it's like, well, he knows everybody and you could fit everybody in this grand atrium or whatever it felt like.
Mm-hmm.
So there were parts like that that were weird. I don't think they did a great job building up kind of the sense of community that we've seen in other shows.
No, particularly because there were characters that we saw a little bit at the beginning, and by the time we saw them again at the end, I'm like, wait, who's it? Oh, that's the guy Trip wanted to have invest. And he said, oh, you put in $1 million, I'll put in $1 million.
Yeah, Trip's investor was one of them. One or two of the crew members we see in the final episode, where they're apparently working in another place now. It's like, oh yeah, I guess we'd seen them in an episode or two. There were a few characters that I kept expecting to get some payoff for. The minister's son, and we close off on him. He's off screen the entire last episode he's in. Characters referenced in.
And anybody could have accomplished what the minister's son was used for. The video footage.
Yeah, the video footage, the whole thing was, he's an influencer who's recording everything, and that's just so we have video footage of something we need to kind of solve the big twist in the penultimate episode.
Well, and to reinforce what's going on with Lawrence health-wise. He sneaks that footage.
Yeah, I don't think we needed him sneaking that footage for that scene to work. And matter of fact, I think it worked better before he snuck the footage.
Yeah.
It's like, I get it. That undercut the scene because we get all this. Lawrence is, he's got like early onset dementia, whatever. And then suddenly we've got this kid having film footage sneaking out of their room or whatever. And I was so distracted by that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's he doing there? What's going on? Why do we care? Is this where we're finally going to get the payoff for this character? None of that happens. And it completely distracted me from the point of the scene.
Well, and one of the things that conceptually I'll grant them was clever in terms of the using the seawater to cool the servers and dissipate the heat and everything. That, okay, I like that in terms of having them in the outer walls of the ship, except that really those outer walls are part of the crew cabins. They're, you wouldn't have corridors against outer walls of the ship.
You wouldn't have that.
Not for the long stretches they were showing.
Well, and the other part is when they discover the servers there, they've, you know, taken an axe, knocked into the wall, which is a gutsy thing to do if you're not 100% sure it's not the outer part of the ship. What apparently they were. They do that, and then next thing you know, we're going down this corridor that goes the length of the ship, and they've knocked all the wall out.
Yeah.
Except for, the support beams here and there.
Theoretically, any well-built ship has got the two layers. And then a lot of the ships, what you have, especially up in the bow area, is you've actually got a wire seal door that lets you go in between those two layers, and you've got a storage locker.
And again, using them for the servers makes sense. The fact it was so easy for a few people to knock out all of those walls in short order, and the debris from that nowhere to be found was puzzling.
Yeah.
And there were a couple of things where they set up, they've got these serving carts somebody could hide in because that's how they killed somebody for their closed room mystery. And then they use those same things to haul all of these servers out. And these servers, they had rack upon rack upon rack of these things for at least 30, 40 feet minimum. Again, it theoretically went the length of the ship, however long that was, which was way longer. And they were able to get those into two, I guess, maybe three.
Yeah, I'd say two. Yeah, that were watertight.
That were not only watertight, but somehow they got off the sinking ship onto the ferry.
Yeah.
Without flooding them, destroying them, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
There were parts of that that just didn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's not about how do computer servers work or whatnot. But when you've got enough of those things, it eats away at the credibility of the story they're telling.
Well, there was one point where you're supposed to be rooting for people to survive. And I found myself rooting for one or two people to get killed.
Yeah, there were a couple. It's like, just push them off. Yeah. Well, I also think the Achilles heel on this show, 10 episodes, and it was episode 7. Because I think we'd watched like 6 in one sitting, 7 in one sitting, and then the last 3 okay. tonight and stuff. And the whole thing is, can the detective figure out who killed Imogene's mom? And then it gets to the point where, nope, he's a fraud.
Mm-hmm.
She's fed up with Rufus the detective, and Imogene's like, fine, tell me everything you know, I'll solve it. That's going into this 7th episode, all of which is taking place. We've just cut the power on the ship. We don't deal with that for the 7th episode. We'll get to that in the 8th.
Mm-hmm.
But the 7th episode is essentially Rufus telling Imogene everything that was relevant to the case of her mother's death from 18 years prior. And it's shot as if it's flashback with her in his position.
Mm-hmm.
Every once in a while, you get her looking at the mirror and seeing him, and that was well done. But the whole thing was so confusing because she was trying to treat it like a holodeck adventure and go in different directions and yeah. whatnot. And it got to the point where, from a narrative point of view, I couldn't trust the narrator.
Yeah.
I was unclear what was going on. How much of this is she really seeing? Is she somehow entering his memories? She's playing things forward. She's winding them back, whatever. I mean, it was so confusing and so different than when we gotten in the first 6 episodes. And they don't really touch on that for the most part in the other 3 after it. There's 1 or 2 lines of, oh, you're envisioning that, aren't you?
Yes.
And if they had set up the Imogene character as not only being just crazy smart, but having kind of a hyper-visualization ability in her mind's eye
mm-hmm.
to treat it like a personal holodeck or whatever, great, I can deal with that. They did the same sort of thing on Unforgettable, the TV show.
Mm-hmm.
At one point in the Batgirl comics, they did that with that character, and that lasted for that duration when she was in Burnside or whatever, and has been pretty much ignored ever since. And it can work, but if you throw it out of the blue 60% of the 70% of the way into a story, it's confusing.
Most things, when they do that, the person stepping into the memory, if you will, steps in as an observer, yes. not taking the place of a participant.
Yes.
And that was what was disturbing me, because she was reacting as an observer while sitting in the place of a participant.
Well, it's like they confused the role of the Leaper and the observer, the hologram, in Quantum Leap terms.
Yeah.
Because she was taking Rufus's place. Rufus was now the observer, coaching her along.
Yeah.
And again, visually, there was some stuff they did very well with that, but it was confusing, and it was such a shakeup in the narrative style
mm-hmm.
that episode just threw me out of the story for a bit.
When I think the whole show would have worked better for me if Imogene had been, I want to say, a character that was easier to empathize with. She fell more towards the Trip character of, this is a character who, in her case, after a tragedy, but like Trip, was handed everything. And her response to it is to behave like a kleptomaniac.
They never really set up the kleptomaniac aspect. I mean, they established it, but they didn't sell it.
Yeah.
Why did she take things?
Yeah.
And that, I think, was a weakness of the story. I think the actress, Violet Bean, did a great job.
Yes.
With the material. I think she elevated the material.
Yes. But it just was not a sympathetic character to
me. I liked the character, but I agree, she was not sympathetic.
And that's a good distinction to make.
If this show were to be done without her or somebody of equal or better caliber in the Imogene role, and without Mandy Patinkin or somebody of similar caliber in the Rufus role,
mm-hmm.
and the investigator who gets brought in to solve the mystery on the ship.
Oh, yeah.
Who nailed the role.
Yeah.
Without those 3, if you didn't have people of that caliber there elevating the material.
I'd add Anna. I think Anna elevated what she was handed.
I think she did too, but I don't think she did it to the extent the other 3 did. I think you needed somebody in the Rufus role that could really sell the old school classic detective.
Yes.
I think you needed to have Imogene as the lead female be somebody we want to follow, believe she can get in trouble, get herself out of it, and she is smart and all of that, without being obnoxious or annoying or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then the investigator who kind of swoops in to solve the grand mystery on the ship and all of that.
Yeah.
Was such a quintessential authority figure.
Yes. Oh, yes.
And with the accent, with the attitude, with the clocking in at exactly 9 a.m.,
mm-hmm.
that sort of thing, those were the aspects that I think really worked. And if we'd gone through this with more pedestrian actors in those roles, by the time we hit the seventh episode, I think that would have bounced us totally out of the show.
Yeah.
Because there would have been nothing to keep us in it.
Mm-hmm.
Because there were a couple of times that, you know, with Rufus, Mandy Patinkin was not quite chewing the scenery, but selling it and very much a character.
Yes.
In the right ways.
Well, from a writing perspective, I felt like for the first probably six episodes, it was every episode, let's give you a, this person is probably the big bad because.
Mm-hmm.
And they just wanted us to keep suspecting everybody.
Yeah, and then when we basically pause the main story to go solve the 20-year-old murder that we don't solve in that episode,
mm-hmm.
I felt that was such a narrative bump in the road. But then we also get back to the main story. It takes a little bit in the eighth episode to get up to speed. And we get then the penultimate in the final episode. The penultimate's got to set up the big turning point. We get to that, which was a great reveal.
Yes.
They sold that. It was not telegraphed. I didn't see it coming. And don't feel like necessarily I should have, but I think they played fair. I could have if I were actively trying to solve it or whatever. And we'd have to rewatch a few early scenes to see if that's true.
I think the only reason I can give them credit for playing fair is because Rufus kept saying memory is a profanity.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we'd seen a couple of key things that once we had one or two more pieces of information,
yep.
we completely see them in a new light.
Yeah.
But then we get to that final episode, and okay, they're off the ship, the murder's been solved, everything's going on, and it kind of felt like we had epilogue after epilogue after epilogue after epilogue, because there's kind of the rest of the story.
And yet we didn't have an epilogue for one entire family of nine people.
Yeah, we didn't get that. And then we, at the very end on another murder, a fairly ghastly one, dismemberment and stuff, as if that were going to be the mystery of the next season.
I couldn't tell if that was going to be a mystery of next season or a, hey, look, this show built a team that can solve mysteries.
Well, that's what I took it as, is that team was going to have to solve that mystery. I couldn't even tell who had died. I was wondering if it was Rufus.
But see, I guess what I'm saying is I took it less literally as this is the mystery the team is going to solve.
But they've solved one. They work together. They
yes.
Between seasons, presumably solve that one, and they're off on a third yeah. or fourth or 15th case.
Yeah. So kind of a walking into the frame is the characters you can expect to see in the next season.
It just seems unlikely that they would stay together as a cohesive team, in so much as I didn't totally believe they had stayed together as a cohesive team at the end of the season. In other words, there were a couple of things at that mountaintop place, resort or whatever, where I'm like, how do they all happen to be here? And when
Rufus,
more than just Rufus. I mean, Imogene was clearly in on it, but I mean, they pulled a lot of people in there. And then when it turns out just about everybody in the place was in on essentially the con.
But I guess my point is they established that Imogene couldn't be using her phone to be calling people because mm-hmm. it had listening bugs, whatever apps, you name it. So her only point of contact had apparently been Rufus.
Yet they gloss over and didn't flash back as to how they reconnected, because as far as he was concerned, she may have been dead.
But we know Rufus reconnected with everyone else on the ferry.
Right. I guess we don't know how she reconnected with any of them.
Agreed. They glossed over a lot, but were left to assume that Imogene had Rufus as a connection point, and Rufus was the connection point to everyone else, and he put the pieces in place.
A totally fair theory. I just would have liked to have seen 30 seconds or a minute or two with how did Imogene get to this spot, reconnect, and where was the mastermind's flaw?
Yes.
That opened the door, that allowed all of this to get set up with them being none the wiser.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, would have elevated that last episode.
Yeah.
Of, wow, these people really are good.
Mm-hmm.
Versus it all just fell into place a little too easy.
Yeah.
Or too magically, I should say. I mean, I enjoyed the show, but there were a number of places where I'm like, that's not how things should have played out, just on a mechanical level of the cruise ship or the servers or whatever. The mystery, I kind of think they played fair. I kind of think they retconned some stuff. When it got to where bodies were just stacking up near the end and whatnot.
Yeah.
And then it's, we're going to blow the ship up. We're auctioning off the escape seats. The motive behind all that, there was a little bit more explaining that could have and should have been done.
I liked what Winnie went through when she found out the truth about who she had killed.
Yes. But then her character was essentially just cast aside.
Not just cast aside, put into a lifeboat and sent off into the sunset.
Yes. And again, we get a line of dialogue of, we acknowledge this character is still around in...
Yes.
Because we're not going to say nothing, but we're not going to say anything either.
I mean, there is quite literally a batch of characters that we reach a point of, we are done with these characters, we're putting them in lifeboats, and we're chucking them.
Yeah. They're literally cast off from the ship.
Yeah.
It's funny because at first it looks like there's just one boat of a handful of people or whatever, and then we kind of cut to, and there all the lifeboats are out there, and it's like, did all the crew go? How was this working? You know,
all the innocents were put ashore.
Which I took to be crew.
And children. Which makes it interesting that the influencer got to go.
Yeah, yeah.
I actually think it would have been more interesting if they'd kept the influencer on board.
Hell, they should have hired the influencer.
Mm-hmm.
I think they did a good job, but I think there was a better job to be had.
I think I was never clear on whether or not I could trust Rufus as a narrator. I don't know where Rufus was for most of an episode, I'd say. I don't know where Rufus was between the Victor Sams helicopter arriving and the ferry arriving.
He was on the ferry, and the influencer kid was not. Because the last time we'd seen him and the inspector were kind of being taken off as if they're being let go with everybody else.
Yeah.
At that point, I was starting to wonder again, can we trust Rufus or is he the big bad?
Yeah. And they wanted us to suspect everyone.
Yeah, but there's a point of playing fair. And again, explain, how did he get on the ferry that just happened to be there? Because it seemed like timing-wise, he shouldn't have been able to.
Which is why I wondered if he was kept on the ship somewhere.
I didn't take it that way because I got the impression on the ferry, they were picking up people and he was checking who they were picking up.
Yeah, that's what I thought too.
Yeah. Again, there are aspects like that where they needed to be clear on the storytelling. And while they told an entertaining story, I think with either tighter editing, another pass on the writing, or bringing somebody in to find these sorts of issues and clean them up, they could have had just an amazing show.
Yeah.
And they were a little short of that. It's still well worth watching. And I think in terms of an ongoing serial mystery narrative, one of the better ones.
Yeah. Well, I had a feeling I understood fairly early on what was happening with Lawrence and his health, complete with the trigger for that. So when we got the reveals on that, I was really happy.
Yeah, that made perfect sense. That was one of those, okay, you've explained it. Yep, I see it. I agree with it. And there's a poetic justice to that.
Yes. And you've played fair.
Yes.
Throughout. I thought I understood who, I guess you would say, paid for Imogene's mother's murder. But I was never clear on who was called to hire it.
I was also never clear on how one character went from being a factory worker, getting paid off, to getting into the position, granted 40 years later or whatever, to buy out the company that had paid her off.
Using $25,000 in China 40 years ago to build a company single-mindedly devoted to the purpose of.
And now has billions
at
her disposal.
Yeah. And changed her name.
Yes. There was some stuff there that I don't think they really closed the loop on.
Yeah.
Right, there's some holes in the narrative, but again, as you're watching them, even though some of them stick out more than others, it's enjoyable enough that it doesn't crater the experience. But I go back to, if they had dealt with that and cleaned up the narrative a little bit in that respect, I mean, if we'd been coming out of here thinking, wow, it's an airtight show, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Plot or whatnot. I'd have been very impressed. And that's a high ask. It was, again, entertaining, but I think a lot of that is, well, they had very good writing. They didn't have perfect writing. And there are a few places it was less perfect than others. They had a cast that was elevating the material they gave them, and that helped a lot.
We had some Ukrainian refugees on board. I think they actually would have done better, instead of having a family, to have four male musicians. And the reason I suggest that is, as I understand it, when the war started in Ukraine, they basically sealed the borders to all men over the age of 18 and basically have the equivalent to conscientious objectors. We just want to play our music. We're, you know, you still would have had, especially if you go with 18 or 19 year old music prodigies, people to go and serve the function that the preteen girl or the teen girl did. But you also would have had the "we want to make love, not war," if you will, aspect to it.
I think the plot point they got from the child of the refugees could have been gotten half a dozen different ways. And the only other purpose the refugee storyline served was to show that there was a way off the ship.
Yes.
That was not widely known.
Yes.
And I don't feel all of that really paid off all that well.
There were a couple things with that. I mean, they talked about going to Palermo. We never seemed to get to Palermo. We never seemed to get to any port.
Well, we got to Malta one time.
We took the other way off the ship to Malta.
Yes, yeah. I could never tell where the ship was coming from and going to. And it seemed to just go out to sea and drift.
Yes.
There was no talk of shore excursions or when are we getting to the next port or anything.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying they had to harp on that or have PA announcements left, right, and center or whatever, but if you haven't got entertainment on board and you're not going anywhere and you're there for a week,
and there's no sign of a spa on board, no sign of a gym on board. I mean, there's...
The closest we saw to that was the vitamin B shots.
Yes.
Where they hook you to an IV for that thing.
Yeah.
That was just weird.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things, if you'd done it as a transatlantic or something.
Yes.
Great. You're getting on one side of the ocean, getting off the other. Not much going to happen in between. I'm good with that.
Mm-hmm.
But it seemed to be...
A med cruise.
A med cruise.
Yeah.
To nowhere.
Yeah.
So I do think your point, if they should have done a cruise for the writing staff after they'd broken most of the story, but before they'd written too far into it. In other words, you've got the structure. Now let's kind of go hammer out the final details, get on the ship, literally see if it holds water.
Well, I mean, they don't even light candles on birthday cakes on ships. So the number of candles and open flames on this ship.
They're out of power. They can't get the generator started back up, but they have a bazillion candles and they use that to light everything. Yeah. Those were the sorts of things that just stood out to us.
Yeah.
And it's not like we cruise all the time or anything, but we've done it enough.
Yeah.
You know, it's like when you're watching a story set on an airplane and there's room for five or six, you know, a mariachi band to walk down the aisle or something.
Yes.
They're not that big. No. Yeah. Those are the sorts of things that if you don't know, it doesn't bother you. But the minute you know, it's like, come on. So if they had just set this at a hotel.
Yeah.
That would have taken the problem away. They buy out the hotel for the week. Boom. Done. You know, so I think they had a really good idea. I think it was a good execution, but I can't help but feel it should have been a better execution. I enjoyed it. I recommend it, but there are flaws to it places.
I wonder if I would have reacted differently if before watching it, I hadn't seen the headline saying they were trying for an Agatha Christie Murder on the Orient Express feel at sea.
I hadn't read that. I had gotten that impression anyways, just from the style of the ambiance on the show and stuff. Enough so that when we were noticing the cell phones and stuff like that, it's like, oh, this isn't a period piece.
Yeah.
Because there was a point where it could have been.
Yeah. But I'm just wondering if that kind of lifted my expectations high.
If I thought the problem was with the mystery side, and that's what we were harping on.
Okay, that's fair.
I would agree with you on that.
That's fair.
But that's not what we're harping on. This is basic, just TV production, write what you know and learn what you don't.
Yes. Yes.
And that was the problem I had. I mean,
Yeah.
They were close enough to shore. They could get somewhere by motorboat, spend a night there, and get back.
Yeah.
Without anybody apparently noticing they were gone.
Yeah.
And it's like, how far out are you? So those are the things I just didn't get. It is fun. I don't think they're getting a second season. And man, in that last episode, it looked like there were about 6 different ways that second season could have gone.
Yeah.
Depending when you stopped watching or whatnot. Actually, if they did a second season, I'd be game for watching it.
Yeah, I'm very curious. Especially, like you say, they set up several alternatives for what could happen.
And I'm really curious what Violet Bean does next.
Mm-hmm.
I thought she was good in Flash. I thought she was really good in God Friended Me.
Yeah.
I think she was even better here.
Yeah.
So I found it worth watching for the cast as much as anything else.
I agree with that. And some of the actors and actresses who had only 5-10 credits, they knocked it out of the park here. I think this was really good for them, and they really made the most of what they had in the script.
Yeah.
Oh, and Trip, the brother.
Oh, the brother. He was on
Deception
that we did an episode on, I think, for that season.
Yeah.
Of the magician who had a twin brother. He'd been framed for murder, and he was solving crimes or whatnot.
Yeah.
That was a good show.
Yeah. And that actor really did some good stuff here.
Yeah. Yeah.
And a lot of the stuff that he does early in the show that can feel like filler, it kind of pays off in his epilogue scene where it's the who would have thought I'd be the one doing this, that, the other.
Well, again, there are signs where they really thought through the whole arc of the characters and stuff like that, which are the parts I like about the writing.
Yeah.
Even though there are other parts that I wish had gotten to that level.
Yeah.
So, again, good cast, fun show, 10 episodes. It's on Hulu. It doesn't take that much time to watch. There is that bump in the road on that 7th episode. Power through it, get to the 8th, it picks back up. And it wasn't like 7th was a bad episode. It was just so different than the rest.
Yeah, I think you referred to it when we watched it as feeling more indie movie than like just another episode.
Yeah, yeah. It just had a totally different feel to it. It's like they changed writers of the book for that chapter almost.
Yeah.
Anything else?
I think that does it.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.